Most of these things that we are noticing and picking up with our whole body and whole system are unconscious to us. Intuition is our channel into the unconsciousness. And this is why I think being connected to, getting acquainted with, celebrating, getting to know our intuition is so incredibly fundamental, important in the world we live in today, because we're all shortening our attention spans. We're all being, like, our attention is being hijacked all the time. There's like a $1 trillion business geared towards hijacking your attention. And they have some brilliant psychologists on board and neuroscientists. So we need to be clever. We need to be the owners of our own attention. We need to honor and respect our intuition, because this will enable us to feel better, to be happier, and also to use our greatest source of intelligence that we can use if we choose to.
Yeah. Okay, Rund.
All right.
Rund, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm super happy to have you at the podcast. And it's so great, just the privilege to talk to you and to get to know you even better around the podcast, and to also share it with the audience. It's going to be a lovely conversation. I already know that. And I'll just give our audience a short background of your life. I mean, it's quite extensive. You did so many things, but I'll try to look at my notes and give it justice. And it's always like in 30 seconds, a whole life, it's impossible. You're an Icelandic sustainability leader. You're an advisor, speaker, and writer. Of course, your new book is here. Your first book, amazing, Insight. We're going to speak about it. And you're a filmmaker. You made a beautiful movie also about intuition. I will talk about this a little bit more. And you're known for bringing sectors together and to inspire creativity and solutions. So you have a background in post-conflict reconstruction with the UN. You work in innovation and the arts, and you advise global leaders, university, and nonprofits. You created this amazing program for the university, and it's actually delivered. That's great. You are, of course, a co-director and scriptwriter of Insight. Do I say it right?
Yeah. Insight, yes.
Insight, The Sea Within. And it's available on major streaming platforms. I just saw it on Apple TV, so it's very recommendable for everyone to look at it. And you also serve on Yale's International Leadership Center Advisory Council. And you're also recognized as a Yale World Fellow and World Economic Forum Young Global Leader. And you have studied at top institutions, including Stanford, Harvard, and Yale. And so, but this is just one part of you. The other part is that you're a very warm and beautiful person. And already have known you for such a long time. I think I've known you for a while. I've known you for a very long time.
Yeah, the feeling is totally mutual.
Only very recently.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. It's only like a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So welcome, Rund, to the Conscious Consulting Podcast. Where we're also
Thank you so much, Julia. It's an honor to be with you.
Yeah, thank you. So what we do in this podcast, it's actually not really about consulting. It's about inspiring consultants, inspiring leaders. And in this podcast, we bring together people also from all walks of life, very, very different disciplines coming together. Because what you said before in our introduction conversation is that at a deeper level, we are basically all talking about more or less the same things. But yes. That our specific topic for today is intuition. Can you give us a first explanation about what intuition means to you and the word insaye, to give us a little bit of context, and then we'll address it from different sides? And a second question, of course, is why is this topic so important to you? Why do you care enough for it to make a book and a movie about it?
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much. So it's such a pleasure to be speaking with you about this topic, which is, as you've described, so close to my heart. Maybe I'll just briefly address the second question and then go deeper into it after the first one. Why is this so important to me? I think essentially I think that we ignore intuition too much. Intuition is fundamental to our intelligence. It is fundamental to our sense of belonging, connecting with other people, the world around us. I don't think that there's a major plot going on in terms of ignoring our intuition, but I think for many different complex reasons, we still have. And one of them is that when we train ourselves, to harness intuition, whether it is in education or elsewhere, we do it through ways that rhymes with the logic of our inner world, of our intuition. And it asks of us to do it in our own original way because it's not as easily replicated as our skills that help us harness our intelligence that has to do with rational thinking, reason, analysis, calculations. I became very interested. Well, let's put it differently. In my late 20s, I hit a wall. I didn't know the word burnout then, but I just crashed. That was my language around it. For different reasons, and we can go deeper into that later. For different reasons, I crashed. Physically, I lost my direction in life. I lost that sparkle in my eye for a while, and that was a very hard time that I went through. And my key to coming back to me and seeing the world with fresh eyes and finding my way again was really to look at, to align with and reconnect with my inner world and intuition. And I started with my own healing, doing practices and learning a lot from other wiser people. I did a lot of reading and research, and I did a lot of creative work, writing and drawing and painting and all these different things just to find my way back to my life. And heal myself. And then I also went on to create a university diploma program where I used many of the lessons that I had learned and then went on to do the film. And during these many years, I had the amazing privilege to speak with people from all over the world, from all walks of life, with different expertise. And some of them are some of the most amazing leaders that we look to in the world today. And these conversations were mostly in English. And so one day I just kind of had this in my head. So we have this amazing element that's part of our existence and which is intuition. And the way that we choose to explain it is on kind of like on the continuum of two extremes. On the one hand, we say that intuition is an irrational impulse that we should not rely on. So that's also like a simplification, but that's a messaging that came for quite some years from the cognitive behavior science, part of our specialization and discipline. And then on the other end of the extreme, we had the definition that intuition, oh, it's something woo-woo, it's part of this new age thing, and it was dismissed. And this is something that we encountered a lot during the first years of presenting this idea that we wanted to do a documentary film about intuition. This is around 2010 to 12, 13, and then things started to change a bit. And somewhere in the middle of all this, we have a growing body of work, rigorous research around intuition and how it is actually fundamental to our intelligence. As an example, we need good intuition to reason well, and without intuition, there wouldn't be much innovation. So this is besides the point that intuition is our channel, it's our key, it's our connector to our own well-being. When we become disconnected from it, when we stop listening to our inner voice, and some people will call it our souls, when we stop listening to the feeling that we have for things that it's inside our bodies, we get this feeling in our stomach or chills down our spine, or we just have this inkling that something's off or something's on. when we stop listening to this, this is when we start to derail from our own kind of path. And that's a very hard place to be in. So when we start to derail, disconnect from ourselves, this is when lots of things happen, which we can talk about later. So all this to say, what is insight? Why have I wanted to spend so much energy and time and effort and happiness on bringing insight into the world? The reason is because after having traveled the world and spoken to all these different people and explored all these different disciplines, including spirituality and science, I just came back to my roots, to my Icelandic language. And I just saw the Icelandic word for intuition with fresh eyes, and it just, everything just clicked. Everything fell into place. And the word is insæi. Insæi is made of two words. It's in, which means insight or into, and sæi means to see or the see. So the way that we have developed our approach to this concept, and when I say we, I'm thinking about my co-director, Kristín, of the film, and the team of philosophers and Icelandic experts that helped me develop this approach, is to say that insæi means the sea within. It means, it refers to the ever-flowing, the always-changing sea within us, which needs to be in a flow, because if we put it into silos or boxes, it ceases to flow. The second meaning of insight is to see within, to be able to know yourself well enough so that you can put yourself into other people's shoes. It's the self-awareness that helps you understand that when you feel deeply angry or emotional, this is not the time to take a decision based on your intuition. It helps you discern biases and fears and prejudices from good intuition. And then thirdly and lastly, insight means to see from the inside out. So this has to do with how you navigate the ocean of life with a strong inner compass. And sometimes I tell the story of, imagine that you're out on sea, you're all alone, you're swimming in the sea. Two rules. Rule number one is keep your head up, otherwise you drown. Rule number two is to decide in which direction you want to go, or you should go in. And that's a much harder decision to take. For those of us who live in the world today in very different settings and circumstances, we have so many possibilities and options. We have lots of hindrances and obstacles, but it's still up to us to take this decision, which is our life's decision. Which direction do I want to take my life in? And on what things am I basing this decision on? And this, I think, is one of the most fascinating questions for us to ask in the world today, whether we are thinking about ourselves as individuals, mentoring our kids or younger or older people, and also for us as a culture, as a civilization that has so much power, willpower, financial power, technical power, to decide in which direction the well-being of our planet is going to go.
There's almost like a phobia against like intuition. Sometimes I think it's confused with being reactive, simply act out of instinct. But I think intuition goes in a way deeper and different form. It's nourished by way more information than just a fight or flight response. It's not about survival. It's really about thriving, right?
Yes, so I love the direction you're taking this, because I think that what has been very useful for me is the stuff I've learned about how we define instinct and intuition. So instinct could be our fight or flight mode. We often talk about human beings are very much afraid of changes and uncertainty, and we turn to fight or flight mode or stuff like that. But I think that we should be careful about generalizing like this, because not all of us are afraid of uncertainty and changes. And in fact, like April Rinney, my friend and author of Flux, would say, have you noticed that when changes are forced upon you, you are afraid? But when you choose to change, you're not so afraid. You may be a little bit nervous, but you're not terribly afraid.
Yeah.
So I think that for us, this is a good thing to talk about early on in our conversation, is instinct is something that we exactly react to. And this may be something we inherit in our genes and through the generations and centuries of human existence. We should not ignore these. But intuition is informed by so many other things as well. Definitely our instincts as well. But also our intuition changes throughout our lives. So a way to think about this is imagine that you are immersing yourself in water. You're diving into a swimming pool, a jacuzzi, or the ocean, or what have you. You are immersed in water. And the water seeps through, you know, it touches all of your body, your skin, your whole body, your brain, you know, your eyes, if you open up your eyes in the water. It's the same with intuition. As we go through life, our whole body is picking up data, information, sensory data, stimuli. And this is constantly being processed by our senses so that it informs our perception of things. It informs how we see and experience things and situations. And this can vary between days even. And then this also informs our thoughts and then our actions and then our collective actions and all these things. And so another good way of addressing this is through the work of Jonathan Haidt and others. You know, with the anxious generation in the US, you have the smartphone-free childhood in the UK, and people all over the world are thinking about the following. When our youngest and younger generation is immersed in the virtual world, and in particular in the world of social media and apps that are to the detriment of their mental well-being, to the detriment of their ability to hold attention for a long period of time in a row, to the detriment of their sense of belonging, to the detriment of their ability to uphold and have social relationship with other human beings. This is the world that they are then immersing themselves in. This is the pool, the swimming pool, the sea that they are immersing themselves in. And it informs the sea within us, our consciousness, which is the body of work that we build on as we take decisions and navigate through life. Most of these things that we are noticing and picking up with our whole body and whole system are unconscious to us. Intuition is our channel into the unconsciousness. And this is why I think being connected to, getting acquainted with, celebrating, getting to know our intuition is so incredibly fundamental, important in the world we live in today, because we're all shortening our attention spans. We're all being like, our attention is being hijacked all the time. There's like a $1 trillion business geared towards hijacking your attention. And they have some brilliant psychologists on board and neuroscientists. So we need to be clever. We need to be the owners of our own attention. We need to honor and respect our intuition, because this will enable us to feel better, to be happier, and also to use our greatest source of intelligence that we can use if we choose to.
What I love is that you bring in the body. Actually, we could say that our body, somebody once said, our body is actually a huge sensor.
Yes, absolutely.
like, why do we have a body? To experience consciousness, to experience the universe, and it's designed as a sensor, sensing, seeing, tasting. And actually, we could sense way more if we had developed the tools like magnetism, for example. Some animals can do that. So we can only tap into very few of the things out there that we could be sensing. But using the body as a sensor is also something that I don't want to talk about artificial intelligence, but it's not embodied. So we have that body that's so sensitive and it picks up so much information, and that gives us so much also answers. We can always, as you say, consult the body. And the
Yes.
distinction between mind and body for me is very incomprehensible. So what if there is a mind-body unity? Because also the mind is, or even the brain is body. I mean, it
Yes.
doesn't live separate from
Yes.
the body. And I think if we remember that we have a body, and if we use the body, and use all the information, and it like our body can pick, as you said, way, way more information than we can pick up with our conscious mind. And this is so
Absolutely.
nourishing, and we can make so much better decision for us, but also for others, right?
Yes. Absolutely. No, I think that's, and that is, this is so key. I think that you also touched upon something that I really like, and Gerd Gigerenzer, he's the former head of the Max Planck Institute in Germany. He's a psychologist. He writes a lot about intuition and the intelligence of intuition. And it is actually from him that I started to explore how intuition is the source of our highest intelligence. So it's not just intuition. It's the fact that intuition is fundamental to our intelligence. So like I said before, in order to reason well, we need good intuition. Without intuition, we wouldn't have much innovation. The thing that he writes about in his book, The Intelligence of Intuition, is it brings us back to ecosystem thinking. And that really resonated with me because, like you said, the body is an ecosystem. You know, I can't remember if you used those words exactly, but it brought me back to it. So the body is an ecosystem. Consciousness is an ecosystem because it doesn't only exist within us. It's all the touching points around us that make up our consciousness in a way. And so it's so important because I was raised up. I wasn't the only one, and you would probably relate to this too. I was raised up thinking that I could either become, you know, a banker, a doctor, a lawyer, or there were these few kind of job titles that we have. We all know that the world has changed and you can do portfolio careers and do different things. But the fact is, most schools for kids, youth, adults, and throughout our lives are based up on the same dichotomy that we were raised up with, which is to bring disciplines into different silos and boxes and then look at the world through them. And I think that what this does is that it hinders our ability to see the big picture and how everything is interconnected. So I write about this in my book. It's like, so the world we live in now is very complex. It's very uncertain. We have like tipping points that will lead us to a future that nobody really knows what we look like. It's uncertainty is as big as ever. And so when we think about the world as complicated, this is when we have a machine or a car that we can take apart into its different pieces, and then we can put the pieces back together and make it work like before. You know, that's a machine or a car. In a world like this, where you have certainty, this is where data, statistics, analysis work best. In a world that's complex, let's take an example of the Amazon rainforest or the human body, including the brain. It's complex. You can't take the human body or the rainforest apart and put it into its individual pieces, expect to be able to put them back together again and make them work as before. This is part of the reason why we need to harness more of our intuition, because in circumstances where we have uncertainty, but we do have experience and knowledge, and sometimes specialized knowledge, this is where well-harnessed intuition works best, according to Gerd Gigerenzer and many more, but I'll leave it at that. And so I think that being able to switch between the two, the known and the unknown, certain and uncertain, that's how life is. Being able to switch fluidly between the two and knowing when to let go of the other and when to
Yeah.
allow the other one to guide you. when to be deliberate and set the next steps, when to be receptive and learn from the things around you, what's coming away. I think that's a skill we need to harness in the world today. And that this is what I write about in my book as the two rhythms and a sharper inner compass.
What I love so much is to integrate those different disciplines that are actually on a deeper level, they're all connected. But we have somehow made to believe on the surface that they are like separate parts, and we don't know how to bring them together. And intuition somehow helps us to create a whole thing out of those parts and make it more comprehensive even.
Yes, this is so well put. And you know, when you say like we know many, those of us who know many things about different disciplines or different things, I know a little bit about many things, let's put it that way. We sometimes talk about generalists. And I only recently thought to myself, no, actually, there are ecosystem thinkers.
Yeah.
They don't only know a lot of things about many disciplines or specializations, they actually know where to touch the different things together. So there's a book, I think it's the Educating Intuition or Strategic Intuition. I can't remember which one, but the author talks about there have actually been done studies about the capacity of people with different specialization, their capacity in connecting dots across disciplines and across sectors. And apparently it varies depending on the background you have. So whether we look at sustainability as a general field of expertise in the world today, or the circular economy. So we need to move from the linear to the circular economy. Most of the countries that are most advanced in the circular economy are somewhere around 4 to 7% circular. Just imagine that. So we have a long way to go. Many of the projects and strategies around that in the world today, in the Nordic countries, in Europe that I know of, are very technically based and very siloed. And while I've been like having conversations with consultancies and people working just on like how do we teach engineers to be more circular in their thinking, and the way that they have proposed the teaching itself, and I'm speaking like around 4 years back in time, are ways that would maintain the siloed linear thinking that we already have. Right. Do you see what I mean? And this is why I've chosen the language to say we need to shift the center of gravity in how we think about things.
Right.
And that's the mental agility that we need to get. That's the muscle we need to train. So there's another recent research on Nobel laureates. So when we talk about human genius and intelligence, we sometimes think about people who receive the Nobel Prize, right? So there's a group of scientists who did a study on them and discovered that when they did their research on how they reached their huge discoveries, they realized that the key to their ability to take the big leaps in their research and development was their ability to shift between analysis and intuition.
Yeah.
So again, it's the same.
Yeah.
Dance with me, you know, move.
Mm-hmm.
Have the discipline to let go of the work that you have soaked yourself in, to go for a walk, see something beautiful, let the wind just kind of embrace you, exercise, meet friends, have a laugh, sleep, rest, you know, all these things that we don't feel like we have time to. But I think more than ever, we need to be disciplined about living the beautiful life that we are surrounded with every day, so that we don't forget about it as we soak ourselves into solving the problems we have.
And I think if we talk about your book, I mean, I want to show it here because we can also make a video here on YouTube and people can see it. Is this book, Insæi, Heal, Revive, and Reset with the Icelandic Art of Intuition. And I read it and I really Loved it, and I will absolutely recommend to everyone to read it and to use it. Basically, it's not a book that you read. For me, it's a book that you should use, because what you not only that you explain and share your story and explain intuition, what it is and how it works and why it matters from very different angles, bringing together all different people. You are a great not only ecosystem thinker but ecosystem convener. Around those topics, and people use different disciplines, different language, because everybody also needs a different language to look at it. But your exercises also are excellent, because they show that intuition is not something that you that's just there. It is just there, but it needs, like, we also have an intelligent brain. We are born with it, but we need to cultivate it. We need to train it. Everybody understands this, right? That we have to
Yes.
use it consciously and learn and study and develop techniques. And what you propose, that it's the same thing for intuition. It can be seen as a skill, or maybe also as a field that needs conscious and intentional cultivation and focus and dedicated time and discipline to touch upon it. It doesn't just show up in our daily lives that are cluttered with all kind of things. It needs discipline to make space for laughing, for friends, for being in nature. It's not something that comes just natural and is useless and a waste of time, but exactly the contrary. So we are totally out of balance. And what you propose in your beautiful meditation practices is to harness on that intuition, but it needs discipline and it needs focus and it
Yeah.
also needs a clear intention. And I, for
Yes.
example, started journaling. I've read it so oftentimes. I'm even writing a lot, but this idea of journaling, like jotting down the thoughts in your head, and not writing and describing something,
Right.
is amazing. So I'm doing that now,
I'm so glad
inspired
to
by
hear you're
your
doing
book.
that. Oh, wow,
Yes,
that's great.
and I'll look into a lot of the things you propose. I already do, because I live in nature, but many not. And I feel that this book is also so valuable and so courageous, because you write about something that's actually not describable, because you write about our direct experience of life, about firsthand experience that's not observable from the outside. We can't put a grid and a matrix of data and the language of mathematics and logic upon it. We can't put it in boxes, but it is a way to share your firsthand experience that you're having in the very limitation that we have is language. It's actually the main conveyor that we have. And it's so difficult. I know it from my own experience, and everybody who's tried to write about consciousness, conscious intuition, it's really difficult. And I think you made a wonderful job in co conveying your own thinking, your own experience to us. And one
Thank
thing, what
you.
I saw, is that you make it through words, but also I see that these words are carrying a certain energy. So there's a certain energy, a certain information between the lines that comes across. And the more open we are when we read the book, and I think this is very important, in which state are we reading such a book? If you read it only with our intellectual mind, we might not get or reap the full benefit of it. But if we read it and listen with our full body and already start the exercises from the beginning, you will get so much more out of it. And I really admire you that you really took the work and the courage and to put this into words. And I also want to thank you, because I know it's a hell of a work. It's so difficult. It's such an impossible job to write about topics where everybody has an opinion and nobody knows anything about it. So let's look a little bit more in
Thank you,
what the
Julia.
book
That's
is.
a
No,
an
it's a
amazing way of like that's really thank
yeah
you.
yeah
It
no
warms my heart.
of course Thank you. And I really want everybody to read it because I'm with you. We need so much more of this. We can't get enough of those books, these movies, those exercises. We don't really need so much more information and
Right.
intelligence and data. We are drowning in it, but then we don't know what to do with it
Do with
because
it,
we
exactly.
miss all the intuition and we miss the wisdom to use it in a way that it's adding to the well-being of everyone.
Yes.
And I think this is the ingredient that's missing to create something not only useful, but something also beneficial for everyone in the ecosystem is through intuition. And I think we have focused it, but this is for me, it's one of the most important topics we have right now, because this is, I think, where we can really, where shift can happen, where something new can develop.
Yeah, and
right.
Yes, and I like, you are very elaborative around this topic, so I really admire the way that you are describing this. And you said we have so much knowledge and data. We have the technology, we have the scientific knowledge, we also have the financial resources to do what's right in many settings, but there's so many things that come to mind now. And I think that my sailing in the sea of insight and intuition has really taught me that depending on how we look at the world around us, just today, as we are talking, as anybody who's listening to this podcast, to be mindful of how we are paying attention to the world around us. And the world, I also mean our home, our garden, or whether we are in nature or surrounded by concrete, it doesn't matter. Just how we pay attention matters the world to us, because we are every day surrounded with an incredible beauty, love, kindness, miracles in nature. It really doesn't matter how hard the situation is. We go through the most difficult sorrows and grief that we are not sure that we will be able to survive after. And in these same moments, more or less, we may experience the most beautiful moments in our lives. So it's the extremes to both ends. I mean, it's to me, intuition is also about acknowledging that diversity in our emotional landscapes, in our intellectual landscapes, in the environments that we surround ourselves with, in the words that people use, in the gestures that they show, and the energy that anybody brings into a room. You know, like, you can walk into a room, there are five people meeting, or they are there for some reason. You walk into the room with a dark cloud over your head and you have a view like this and you hardly say hi, and your energy has ripple effect on the energy in the whole room. Mm-hmm. You can't measure it, but it does. We all know that feeling. You can also walk into the room and be like, hi, what a wonderful thing that I'm able to meet you all today. How are you?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about this idea? What do you think about? I want to hear your view. You know, just stuff like this is this is what leadership can look like. This is what it can look like when you're a nice person to be around, whether you're a daughter, son, husband, partner, you know, all these different things. It's how we bring out the day to day is to a great extent up to us. And then we also know that there's so many things in the world and around us that are not up to us to decide. And for those things, we need to learn how to navigate that. We can't carry the burden of the world on our shoulders. It's important that we know that we acknowledge that many things happen in the world that we are not happy with. It goes against our values. It breaks our hearts. And it's important to voice it, because we have enough media coverage. We have enough conversations going on in the parliament where we have democracy thinking 3 years, maybe 4 years ahead of time, not even so much, you know. So it's important that we voice what kind of a world we want to live in and how we want to interact with one another and why we think it's important to smile or be generous in spirit. It is very important.
Right. And we focus, if you focus on things that we have no influence upon, then we feel so disempowered.
Yes.
And then we don't look and, as you say, notice what you notice and how you notice.
Yes.
You write it also beautiful in the book, is to really own and be responsible for your own experience and how you experience the world. Right. So we have a choice here. It's not that we're the victims of our environment, of the media and of all the terrible things going on. And we probably miss out the direct experience of life that's happening in the here and now and everything we could actually do, because we're so much focused on what all we can't do.
Yes.
And this is also not good for intuition, because we totally disconnect from our own empowered decisions, and we stop like taking. And I think this is what you're proposing, is that you own your experience, that you own your life, that you own your inner compass, that you own your time, and that you own that, like get back the power to own and consciously choose what you are giving, what you're paying. It's some kind of price that you're paying, is your own attention, the most important that you have.
Absolutely.
And this needs discipline, as you say.
It does.
If you're not disciplined, we're just drawn away, because the world around us is designed to attach our. So we need to consciously take it back to us. Is this what you're proposing?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I think that exactly, we need to consciously be the stewards of our own attention and to be mindful of. So, you know, it's like two layers of this. So you will go to a family party or a work lunch or whatever, and people will talk about how we are addicted to our smartphones and our kids are and all these things. We can say these things. But much like we know a lot of stuff, like you mentioned before, it doesn't matter if we say these things because we read them somewhere or heard them somewhere. We know it's kind of like the mainstream language now. It really doesn't matter unless we do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, how are you going to represent presence instead of represent destruction? Not destruction, but destruction. You know, like, how are we embodying and representing and giving ripple effects from presence, of being present in the here and now? You know, it's the greatest gift we can give one another, is to be present, to really listen and to really be here in this location we are now. There are leaders growing up around the world and just young people growing up around the world who are going to be having an impact on their small communities, big cities, even countries. If they are not present in the real world, but mostly in the virtual world, they are not going to be grounded in the places that they live in. And yet they will be informed. What will inform their decisions and actions in those settings will come from somewhere else. And in many ways, it's not much more complicated than that. You know, I give the example in my book about the Polynesian, ancient Polynesian navigators. The ancient Polynesian navigators were able to map almost the entire Pacific Ocean, which is the largest bed of ocean enveloping planet Earth. They were able to map almost the entire Pacific Ocean hundreds of years ago without any of the modern tools now available to us. Compare that to what Enric Sala says in my book, who is a National Geographic explorer in residence. He says, compare that to the fact that today we know about 5%, and I do add up to 20% because it depends on which sources you use. We know about 5 to 20% of the world's oceans today with all the technology available to us. Mm-hmm. I think this has to do, in essence, with how we pay attention to the world. So the ancient Polynesian navigators, they traveled on canoes. They sometimes slept at the bottom of the canoe, but through their sleep, some of them were that qualified, through their sleep, they would know if they were coming closer to an island or if there was a tide somewhere in the distance that they needed to be aware of. They embodied that knowledge of the world around them. And they were able to do what we would always call today, like Wade Davis writes about in The Wayfinders. Their achievement is only matched by our ability to send a man to the moon. So, you know, stuff like that. And I had the privilege of meeting one of the very few people in the world today, Tua Pittman, while I was sailing on the Polynesian Ocean 6 years ago. He's one of the few people in the world today who are reskilling himself and the younger generation to sail in the same way. So they would read into the clouds, the stars, the behavior of birds and shadows on the ocean to understand if there was an island in the distance or where to go next. And so I asked Tua Pittman, I said, I'm writing a book about intuition. And I want to ask you, like, do you, so I had my daughters, I have two daughters. I had my daughters with them, with me. And I said, they spend a lot of time on their smartphones. Do you think that this affects their intuition? And he just looked at me like I was just losing it. He was like, of course it does. You know, if you want to fill your intelligence and your mind with information that comes scattered from all over the world, this is what you're going to have, a scattered brain, a scattered mind. If you want to fill your mind and senses and intelligence with the information that your environment is informing you with, you will know your environment and you will know how you belong in it. I just think that's really wise.
And while I was reading about the Polynesian navigators and listening to you, a thought came to my mind that the most powerful modern tool we have is ourselves, is our body, our intuition.
Yes.
And the modern tools are kind of trying to mimic in a way worse way what we already are able to do.
Absolutely.
So even our body, our brain is a supercomputer. It can process so much more information at the same time than any computer we've ever built. Yet we trust the external tools way more than we trust ourselves, although they are totally shortcoming in comparison to what we are already able to do.
Yeah. So can I ask you a question?
Yes.
With your amazing varied background, largely in the corporate world and what has to do with finance and stuff like that, what do you think needs to happen in order for the world of investments to go more into investing in solutions like that? Because you said we rely so much on things that lie external to us. Like I also write about in my book, and a lot of people like us think the same. We're like, there's something wrong with this. You know, we have so much this, much knowledge in ourselves, and also in nature, in permaculture, in older ways of doing stuff around nature.
Yeah.
So then we have this investment world, which is very big and varied as well. But just to simplify, that is really looking to scale up.
Yeah.
You know, scale up means there's a solution that goes across borders and countries and regions and just to sell as many as possible and to scale up. And then we get benefits of our investments tenfold or whatever fold. What will it take? What's the most important thing for us to shift investments?
I was thinking about it a lot, and I was hoping, like a lot of people say, yeah, we have like a shift in consciousness now. People get more aware. And I think there's two ways. The one is an intrinsic, and the other one is an extrinsic forces that are coming. The intrinsic would be the growing in consciousness, in awareness, and conscious in a way, how I say it, is to be aware and to care about the impact that we have on ourselves and the world around us. There are some people and some leaders and some investment funds that are already going into this direction because they have understood that they don't, and also investors, people who don't want to invest more in things that are detrimental to the earth. This is a very small fraction, but what I think from my understanding of markets and economy is the only The only thing that really shifts money, because money is energy and this is where it goes, is the pressure from the younger generation. Clients that say, I'm not going to buy the chit anymore. My nephew, for example, he doesn't buy anything that has palm oil in it. So this is one thing. The second thing is the next generation that doesn't want to work for those companies anymore. So it is the employees' pressure, the customer pressure, and then investors that said, for this very reason, I'm not going to invest in companies anymore that are destructive and extractive for the world. But we are going to invest in regenerative business models because it's also better for our business. So I don't think it's enough to just have the intrinsic motivation. But what I see is at the moment we think, or the idea is that we have to choose between profit or purpose. Let's say it very simple like this. But what if we shift the narrative in a way that we say only if you have a business model that adds to the value and that adds to the well-being of people, planet, it will also be beneficial for the financial and the material well-being of the stakeholders and the shareholders. So I think if we are able to make a cause for this shift in thinking, and people over time experience that they won't make money and don't get the benefit out of it with those destructive and extractive business models, I think a shift could happen. But I think it needs all of us. I don't believe in there are some certain leaders who can lead the way. I think the next Buddha, the next Buddha is the community. It is not the one person that is going. It's going to be a shared effort of all of us. But I feel that the next generation, that the customers, the employees, the talent, that they can choose, and that they have an immense market power they can bring to the place. And I'm very, very optimistic and positive that they, of course, want to live in the world that's still there.
Yes, exactly.
They are in some sense desperate that like the older generation is destroying the world. And I think there's a lot of guilt and shame also around it. But I don't think that is helping us at all. I think
no, exactly.
That in reality, all generations are now working together. And the more pressure we make, the more we don't buy on an individual basis what's detrimental to the world, the more we shift our collective behavior, the more power we will have. And the money will then be directed in a different direction.
Right. So what you're in a way saying is that it's the work you do, it's shifting consciousness in people that take actions.
Yeah.
The more people who do that, the better, right?
I have a very clear and simple model that what I see also in leaders, in entrepreneurs, in investors, is that the more they cultivate their inner wisdom, they become conscious of themselves and the world around them, they tap into their intuition, the more they will very intrinsically and naturally and genuinely want to create something in the world that's beneficial for everyone, people, planet, and themselves, of course. And I can see that. And then what I also can see is that this is awakening in a lot of people. They have children, they all see the world, and they have a huge conflict of values from what they think they have to do in order to sustain the livelihood and do the job in the corporate world, and what they really seem themselves to be true. And I think what we do is we inspire and encourage people, be it consultants or leaders or entrepreneurs or founders, to live their life and in line with their own values, with their consciousness, and say, like, the business is a very good way to practice our spirituality and to use our intuition and not live as in this world that's work or life. It's really to have a very holistic view at yourselves and say, as Jane Goodall once said, You can't go through a single day without having an impact on the world around you.
Yes.
And I think to make people aware that they make an impact with everything they say, they do, they decide, is one thing. And the second thing is to set an intention to contribute to the well-being. I don't think so much that we can, that we have so much power to impact and change and should try to change everything, because the world is not that linear. It's very complex, as you say. But what I think is what we can do is to set the intention to contribute to the well-being of the society around us, to the natural world, and to ourselves, and also to the stakeholders and shareholders. There's nothing, nothing wrong with I would say, with financial and material well-being. I think it's very important for me too. But think about of the enough. Don't take more than you really need. And so these are some glimpses of what we do in our work. Is we work with people and leaders who already have this idea and don't really know how to manifest this in the world,
right,
and how to include other people in these conversations. So it's basically really giving room and space for those conversations. And then the next thing, I think what you said is so important. I go to all these conferences and everybody says, what should be done? And we need more this, and we need more even intuition, and spirituality is now coming. So it's not like 10 years ago that you could only whisper it or not even say it.
You couldn't even say it,
So people are now way more explicit about it. But where's the action? And I
think
I'm very interested, and this is how I see consulting is a means, it's a tool to help getting those ideas into action. So to transform wisdom into impact and to define frameworks that are simple enough to people to comprehend it and put it into action, and not stay with what we should and what has to be, and we need more of this. I've had enough of all of that. So as you say, to create a bridge between talk and research and knowledge that's there, or wisdom traditions and business. But I think this is what you're doing too in your programs when you work with leaders. You want to share a little bit more about this?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's absolutely. So
thank you for asking. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And I do think that, you know, I'm doing a little bit of work now with TED Countdown.
Yes.
You know, I did my first proper TED talk this summer, and I'm doing a workshop later this year with a group of 150 climate leaders.
Oh, wow.
Among others, to be sure. But because I was just going to say with your examples, I think it's so important to give examples and speak about them and share them. And I know it can be hard as a consultant, but share them in the way that you're doing now, because we need to know that there are things like that out there. So TED Countdown is most of us know TED. It's the platform where people give talks that inspire others. And TED Countdown is about being proactive about collecting information and sharing talks and inspiration around how urgently we need to tackle the climate crisis and other related crises. And so the way that they are constructing some of their events that I've come to know, and I'm sure many more, is to really combine exactly like you say, the storytelling, the inspiration of how we can do stuff with through ideas, or the inspiration of how things are being done. So ideas that are being implemented. And then the third element that I'm getting to know a little bit more about now through them is that they also take these, and they really have our leading thinkers speaking on stage, like Johan Rockström about the planetary boundaries and others. And so, and then what they also do now, thirdly, is to take these talks, these inspirations, and ground them through practices, real life examples and exercises in the room. And I think that's one of those hope giving things. So you combine that, because we have no time to lose, if you think about it that way. And so I think that in order to enter the mainstream conversation and the mainstream thinking is to share stories of what's being done that is different. Because I think that most people, at least many, many, many people, really feel it in their bones, in their blood, in their bodies. They really feel that something's off, something needs to be done differently. But it can be very hard to find the way to do things differently. Not everybody is an innovator or an entrepreneur or a leader, you know. So it's even job ads, you know, there's so much more we can do around job ads to generate and you know, to really stimulate the minds of people who are thinking holistically about themselves and the world around them.
It really is what I love. Like Buddhism says, there are no small things.
Yes.
And there are no big things. So some people think because I can't do the big thing, I don't even try to do the small thing because it's only small.
Right.
It won't make a difference.
Yeah.
But I think with let's say a shift of the mind and the heart, we always think, we look at these heroic gestures, these big heroic gestures and leaders who have like planted 1 million, 10 million trees. I mean, that's perfect. That's very important. It's wonderful. But I think we should say that everybody can and has to make a contribution. And it's not only about what you buy and what you eat, but I think it's very much about how are you thinking about yourself and the world? What is the intention you are setting? Like everything that you talk about in your, like I'm convinced that if let's make an, if everybody in the world would read and use this book, we would live in a different world immediately. Immediately. It wouldn't have to take like 100,000s of years. I'm very much convinced in the idea that we call it instant transformation, is the moment you take a new choice, a new world emerges around you. The moment you think
about
yourself, instantly you are creating a transformed world. And what you say, the energy you bring to room, is, and it ripples down and suddenly you have changed the world, your world around you. And people always think in transformation in terms about something out there has to change, the politics, economy, the systems, of course. But I think they are just mirroring back our internal state of thinking and being, like greed, jealousy, I want more. All of this is reflected there. The world is only a reflection of our inner state of being, of our collective consciousness. And what I think the most direct way to transformation is the one you're proposing, by our own awareness. This is so much more powerful. And then everything manifests by itself over time in a very new way. But if we change if we don't change how we think about ourselves on the world, and we're trying to change our things, it's so, like, it's the same thing that I had in change management in organizations, is trying to change structures, to change systems. It's so heavy, it's so difficult. But if you create a space where people can have a new insight and something becomes clear to them, then a total new behavior is so natural and obvious and easy, with a lot of lightness. I think here we have a very, very direct access to the very DNA of human consciousness. And when we change something here on the, let's say, epigenetic level, wow, the whole body shifts.
Yes.
So I'm very much more focused on the inner journeys of leaders and organizations and see how it wants to unfold, rather than, you know, it's sometimes a little bit violent, this idea of changing systems. You have to put pressure, you have to try to get systems, people, organizations to act differently. You have to press them into different forms. I don't think that's needed, and I don't think that's very healthy. And I think we should, this is how I see how the shift in the world can be. this.
Yes, yeah. No, thank
You
you.
Are
And
onto something.
No, I love this. And I think that, I think also, just to tie to this a little bit, I think that we have taken our faith, belief, and trust in institutions, organizations, regulation a bit too far. So that people who are working in these organizations, they feel disconnected from the purpose and the benefits of it.
Yeah, because it has its own life.
It has its own life.
Yeah.
And they are being, sometimes employees are being made to feel like they are easily dismissed and replaced by somebody else. Then why should they show up for 8 hours a day or 12 hours a day or what it is? And so there's this apathy that we need to take responsibility for as well. And I think that's what you've just described is also something that I think is a great insight into that apathy in the work market.
Yeah.
And so sometimes to reverse processes and make sure that they come from people, they take a bit longer at the start for people to really understand the context, to really, it's like, and then it becomes intuitive
right.
to do it in a holistic way. And then it becomes so easy and quick. It's not so complicated. But when it's a pure statistical, technical exercise that nobody really cares about,
yeah,
then it's also going to have less impact. I mean, my work with the UN in post-conflict reconstruction and development was also very much about shifting this around, you know, to not to say in a top-down way, you need to do this and that, but rather to approach the people that we could sense that saw opportunities in certain things that we were offering. And for example, we want a brighter future. I mean, isn't that what most of us want, or all of us? We want more equality between people. We want more peace. We want democracy. We want the free market, or whatever it was. And then to really take the time to bring these people together who are agreed on that future vision, even if they had just come through a very horrific conflict, where they genuinely sometimes hated each other for very solid, good reasons. And we were still able to go towards a future vision that they shared, because the vision was bigger than them.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that is just so important as an addition to what we've been talking about, just to say, like, to take our vision and aims for the future seriously, because they describe who we are. And we now know that as we're going through the Anthropocene, which means that for the first time in history, the future of planet Earth is up to how we organize our lives. Because people, we have so much impact on the world we live in. Now we know this. Should we use this impact to have the ripple effects we want to see in the world?
And what you also said is one thing I want to say about these people being disconnected in organizations. I think sometimes they're disconnected to protect themselves. I think it's actually a healthy
yes.
response to a very
yeah.
unhealthy cause, and they're working towards purposes that they can't and don't want and shouldn't connect to anymore.
Right.
So what happens now is that people just don't show up anymore. And I'm just curious what they will do instead. What if they created something new instead of trying to change the old system, create a new system that's more in alignment? And I think this is where the shift is happening right now. I think it's a good
yeah,
thing.
So yeah, exactly. So that's great. So I would love to hear if you or anybody else listening can share with us some data, some information about how this is emerging.
Yeah.
In the world today, because we both, and I'm sure listeners will too, know about so many people who have left their jobs, resigned from their jobs, gone into the unknown or whatever, because they want to create something new.
Yeah. Yes.
And like
yes.
you say, that's a great thing. This
yeah.
is how we do stuff. You know, this is how nature renews itself. This is, you know, things go aside so that new things can grow.
Yeah. I think these old systems are going to die because there's no fresh blood coming in anymore.
Yeah.
And we need to let them go. We shouldn't give them too much money to try to sustain them.
Yeah.
And help, this is what we try to do in our work, to encourage and help those people who want to create something really differently and bring something new into the world in alignment. And what I see is also from your work is that the more we speak about it and the more we make it explicit, the better.
Yeah.
And also see that, to wrap it up, to see this is a gift we have, but it needs attention, and we need to cultivate, or like we need to cultivate our body, our mind, everything.
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
The intuition needs some specific attention to.
Yeah.
Rune, coming to an end, what is your maybe closing remarks or message that you want to give our audience, your audience?
Wow. So great question. I would say be intentional about trusting how you experience life. Put in the work and the love to strengthen your alignment with your intuition. Put in the work to honor how it is that you are seeing the world. And remember that we pay attention to so many things throughout the day, but it's actually rather seldom that we pay attention to what it is that we are paying attention to. And at the same time, it's informing our perceptions, thoughts, and actions in the world and how we show up. And so I like to encourage people to do attention journaling. And it had a really, really strong impact on me when I started doing it for the first time. And then all the research I've done and the work that I've done with people who are practicing it, I know that it is a big giver. It gives us a lot. It helps us see the world and ourselves differently. And so that exercise is about paying attention to what you pay attention to and documenting it. What I call in the book, attention journaling. So simply pay attention to what you pay attention to. Start with that. Write it down and then make sure that you take a look at it once a week or so and be surprised, be in awe, or be like, the thought keeps coming up again and again. Or like, why did I only see rusty rooftops on this day? How was I feeling on that day? Just to understand what it is that affects the way that we see the world around us, so that we can be more in control and more stewards and celebrate more how it is that we see the world. I think that is what I would leave people
beautiful
with.
Beautiful. Rune, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Julia, for inviting me. It's been such a pleasure.
We took a very long journey, and still there's so much more to explore and
so
to talk about.
To
I'm just looking at my notes, and there's so much more there. But I would also like to invite people to find out more for themselves, to read your book, to harness the intuition, and yeah, to notice what they're noticing, being all beautiful. Thank you so much for
Thank
sharing
you.
With me and with us all of your wisdom, all of your research, and who you are. And yeah, hope to see you soon. And for now, thank you so much. Bye bye.
Thank you, Julia.
Bye.
See you. Bye.